Chapter 11, Your Working Procedures. Keep your eyes on the road, your hands upon the wheel. From the song Roadhouse Blues, written and performed by The Doors, Elektra Asylum, 1970. The quality of execution of recurring non-documented protocols can vary with the time of day, the weather, or the mood of the individuals performing the processes. In the workplace, the challenge and the solution is to make these ubiquitous organic human processes as solid and reliable as the mechanical processes that surround us. Boring but true, we do this with documentation. At Centratel, we analyze a system individually, document it as it is, find the cause of any recurring problem or inefficiency, devise a system improvement to fix the problem or cure the inefficiency, and then create a prototype written working procedure. We then test the procedure in the real world, tweaking it into a final form that precisely explains the desired execution of the process. The new working procedure is released, and the Centratel staff follows it exactly as written. That's it. A system improvement requires a written working procedure. The working procedure makes the system tangible, something to be seen, grasped, understood, perfected, shared, and then applied exactly the same way every time. Know this. A "this will happen every single time" protocol won't materialize via mind reading, a one-time conversation, or when it is discussed in a meeting. An effective process must be set in concrete, and that means creating it in hard and/or soft copy, distributing it, and then ensuring that it is implemented. You, who are managers, must consider it your ethical responsibility, not just an efficient way to operate, to provide working procedures for your staff. I occasionally remind my employees that it is my personal moral obligation to provide them with the tools to do their jobs. Expecting an employee to be able to read the boss's mind is not just an absurd expectation, it's unfair. I tell them that. Creating working procedures. At Centratel, the same inefficiencies kept cropping up over and over, devouring any bottom-line profit and literally killing me physically. These recurring problems were the natural result of undocumented, uncontrolled processes. Now, working procedures, products of the system improvement process, prevent these serial headaches by providing exact direction for flawless operation. We break things down into small system package units by extracting systems from the daily operation and then outlining them on paper in a simple, linear, chronological format. First this happens, second that happens, third, etc. We also have a number of nonlinear working procedures that are better explained in either a narrative or a bullet point format. After documenting a given protocol as it is, we analyze the mechanical process and from that, develop a streamlined finished product with attending final documentation. Then we implement it. Everyone follows the new procedure exactly as it is written. Over time, we tweak it to perfection. We follow the system improvement routine over and over again, making every individual system perfect. The finished products are our working procedures or simply procedures. At Centratel, we have approximately 300 of them. Depending on the task, they can range from the utter simplicity of two short sentences to line after line of detail encompassing half a dozen pages. Feathers in the wind. Remember that a set of instructions for a process is not a working procedure until it is written down. Instructions that are not written down are feathers in the wind. Think of it this way. You can't represent yourself as being a college graduate unless you have the diploma in hand. No diploma, no degree, no exceptions. You are either a college graduate or you are not. Think of your working procedures in the same way. If they are not tangible, they don't exist. Three key points in creating working procedures. Key point number one for designing, producing, and executing procedures is to use the best solution for a recurring problem or process every single time the problem or process surfaces. At Centratel, we collectively decide what works best in the majority of circumstances. We cast the procedure in concrete, in written form, then we apply the procedure exactly as written every single time. No matter who applies the protocol, the same best solution will always be applied, and therefore best results will almost always occur. Will the working procedure provide the perfect solution for every situation? No, but it will be perfect most of the time, and that is far better than haphazard solutions that are applied on a whim. So over time, incremental best results add up to a big best result for the primary system. Key point number two is that procedure documentation is not limited to just the obvious problem areas. It applies to all internal processes. Documenting a seemingly flawless process will often reveal small imperfections. It will take a while to turn every process into a working procedure, but the efficiency increases earned from this effort will accumulate. If a subsystem is already 90% effective, yet it can be boosted to a level of 98% effectiveness, that's a good thing. What could be better for a primary system than to spend time improving all of its subsystems? Key point number three is to create your working procedure documents for anyone off the street. This means that someone who doesn't even work for your organization could perform the process. More on this later. These days, little goes wrong at Centratel, and the things that do go wrong are fixed immediately. As fire killing is reduced and more processes are automated and delegated, free time becomes more available. This is the main reason our managers seldom work more than 40 hours a week, and why my work week as company CEO and general manager is rarely more than 2 hours. This overall efficiency is also the reason I now earn far more in a month than what I used to earn in a year. Our first working procedure. Coming immediately after my midnight epiphany, our first working procedure was the deposit procedure, which provided our management staff with exact directions for processing the dozens of client payments that come in the mail each day. This process involves more than the actual bank deposit. It also includes receiving incoming checks, crediting them to clients' accounts in the receivable software, and cross-checking totals. 10 years ago, when we created this first working procedure, three management people, including me, were authorized to make a deposit. No written instructions existed. The reason we focused on the deposit procedure first was because it was a critical system and it had deep flaws. It seemed to be our most troublesome process. Without any set in writing protocol, and with each of us performing the task in our own unique way, we too often made random mistakes, seldom in Centratel's favor. And if they were in our favor, a client was shortchanged. Sometimes we applied payments to the wrong accounts, and too many times deposit sums were incorrect. One time, a $3,000 deposit was lost by one of our managers, only to be inadvertently found weeks later under her car seat. Of course, any wasted money was subtracted dollar for dollar from the bottom line. As we describe in operating principle number 10, the money we save or waste is not monopoly money. And with all the gyrations and outright errors, the process was taking far too much time, and that was a waste. So the three of us put our heads together. After thoroughly interviewing my managers, this first system improvement working procedure took me 4 hours to compose. Then, to tweak it to perfection, it took maybe 3 more hours spread over a couple of days. The first deposit procedure contained 53 individual steps. Here is how they went. Step 1. Put the envelopes in a stack in front of you on the desk and open all the envelopes. Do not take the contents out of the envelopes. Step 2. Open the receivable software and go to the deposit module. Step 3, etc., proceeded through all the paper processing until step 50, which is to take the deposit to the bank and make the deposit. Step 51. At the bank, get a deposit slip and check the amount deposited to make sure it matches the amount on the deposit slip. Step 52. Back in the office, staple the bank deposit slip to the upper left-hand corner of the receivables batch printout. And step 53, place the printout in the daily deposit file in the receivables file cabinet in the CFO's office. We agreed that if any one of us saw room for improvement in the procedure, we would collaborate on the spot. If we all agreed the change would be good, we would instantly update the procedure's documentation and just as quickly implement the revised procedure. This is important. A published procedure itself is inflexible. Yet we will immediately change the construction of the procedure if the change will improve it. This change it immediately parameter was per our do it now operating principle number 14. We put the deposit procedure into play. From then on, no matter who performed it, the deposit process proceeded the same way every single time. And over time, we tweaked it even more, and each time we did, the procedure got better. We built double checks into it so we knew for certain that the payments were tallied correctly, and we built in steps to ensure that the deposits made it to the bank. Because we put the procedure together in a simple 1-2-3-step off-the-street format, anyone within the company could make a deposit. As a result, I didn't make deposits anymore. We delegated my portion of the task to another staff member, and because of the written procedure's simplicity, we didn't have to take the time to train someone else to do the task. Completing that first working procedure reduced my personal workload by at least a couple of hours each week. That's 2 hours per week over 10 years. Do the math. In its own way, that first procedure was a tiny masterpiece, and yet we continue to polish it to even more effectiveness. Since we started using it, there's been only one small, easily corrected error. Of course, repairing that particular error meant yet another small improvement in the written procedure, per General Operating Principle No. 7. Today, the deposit procedure is down to merely 23 steps because of better software and my staff's learned ability to simplify, streamline, and economize. Per William of Ockham, simplicity is indeed evidence a solution is sound. Even though we put the first procedure together so long ago, I remember this vividly. It was satisfying beyond words to know the deposit processing was finally stable and efficient, and it was no small satisfaction to realize I would never have to personally handle another deposit. The working procedure, a mandatory element of the system improvement process, is not theory or feel-good fluff. Rather, it is something that is down and dirty useful in the real-time world. It reminds me of the title of a short story by Raymond Carver, A Small Good Thing. That's what a working procedure is, a small good thing. The idea is to make your business and your life a huge accumulation of small good things. The test of time. Regarding the strategic objective and the operating principles, know that an endorsement of their viability is the test of time. If you are truly using them and they change little over the months and years, this is confirmation they are sound. On the other hand, working procedures should constantly evolve, and that evolution is confirmation they are valid. A work in progress. What was our second working procedure? We analyzed, dissected, and set in stone the methodology the telephone service representatives used to process incoming calls. Our TSRs have executed this working procedure thousands of times every day since we put it into place so long ago. Precisely following this procedure is the ticket to relaxing and enjoying their work. For example, if there is an error in delivering a message, the TSR holds no blame as long as he or she followed the message delivery procedure exactly. As it turns out, nearly all message relay problems are due to system error, not TSR error. Because our TSRs follow written procedures exactly, nearly all errors are traced back to clients who have not informed us of changes, changes that invalidate the previous on-record working procedure for that client. The procedure was at fault, not the employee. The cure is to make an immediate mechanical update in that client's message relay working procedure, not chew someone out. This lack of finger-pointing contributes much to the serenity of the office. In the months after we instituted the deposit and TSR answering procedures, we analyzed and streamlined scores of other recurring processes, including how to put together the staffing schedule, how to streamline collections, and how to pay the bills. We created procedures for performing the monthly customer invoicing, ensuring various housekeeping tasks were done on a regular basis, making the most effective sales presentations, and so forth. For some undocumented processes that were in place, our system improvement analysis suggested that creating a working procedure wasn't necessary, and in fact, we had been wasting our time performing the process at all. Discarding paper records of customer contacts is a good example of this purging action. In analyzing the process, we discovered that after years of accumulating hard copy evidence of every client interaction, no staff member had ever gone back to those files for information. When these obsolete processes occasionally appeared, we dumped them with a flourish, a collective grin on our faces. For other less than efficient tasks, we found ourselves devising radically altered protocols with final versions unrecognizable from the originals. It was a cleansing process. The assertive effort to root out and improve every single system led us to these unexpected deletions and substitutions. CentroTel was becoming dramatically more efficient. We worked hard, improving and documenting system after system. Interestingly, there were rarely relationships among the procedures we created or revised. The sore spots we tackled were unrelated, but we had a methodology for setting priorities. We straightened out the weightiest problems first. As we worked up the new procedures and released them as official, I found myself delegating more and more tasks that had been my responsibility. I simply handed a completed working procedure over to the appropriate manager and walked away. I was steadily gaining additional personal time to reinvest in tackling more problem areas. It was the same situation for my managers as they delegated processes down the chain of command, while the rate of incoming problems continued to decrease. Although the original one-time heavy lifting, the documentation of all our procedures in one gigantic effort, ended years ago, we continue to assertively apply the system improvement methodology on a moment-to-moment basis. No longer do we fire kill. Instead, we work our systems. Just write it down. At first, it will seem like you don't have the spare time to work through the system improvement working procedures process. That's a mistaken premise, because if you think creating procedures is a spare time task, the process will take a back seat to the crisis du jour. Procedure documentation must go to the top of your priority list, or the process won't start, or it will be derailed in a week or two. You will fail. For your business or job, raise the importance level of writing procedures to the number one position, even above some of the fire killing of the day. Forget about finding spare time to do this work. Don't waste your efforts by starting on that premise. There is no such thing as spare time. Although it might take an hour or two a day to write up and then institute a new procedure, do it. Personal time savings will begin immediately upon implementation. Soon you will crave spending time on your quest to document your entire operation, while the time you spend doing other tasks will be frustrating. Remember, the litmus test for simplicity is that anyone from outside the company, off the street, could perform the procedure. Of course, depending on your business or job, this simplicity might have to be more specific. For example, writing an electrical engineering procedure for an off-the-street layperson is not going to work. But writing an electrical engineering procedure for an off-the-street electrical engineer is reasonable. With working procedures, you will save enormous time in training people to full effectiveness. An employee who doesn't know the ropes of a particular task will simply read the procedure and then get the job done without assistance from other staff members. There will be no error-prone or belabored learning by osmosis. Note that first-timers are the best source for tweaking a procedure to perfection. Have them review the procedure and ask them what can be improved to make it truly off the street. Someone using the procedure for the first time has fresh eyes and is not jaded by an insider's can't see the forest for the trees limited vision. And of course, for yourself and for your managers, the extra time saved is used for improving the systemization even more. The cycle of increasing returns. Here's another large plus. With written working procedures in place, your operation will become more professional. Your people will recognize this and raise their expectations for themselves and for their company. Your staff's pride and enthusiasm will shine brightly for your customers. A machine to implement tasks. Our point-of-sale internal communications hinge on Microsoft Outlook, which keeps us organized through its standard calendar, task list, and contact information sections. For a manager, the most important part of the software is the tasking feature. In a moment's notice, the leader can issue instructions to a staff member that include precise directions as to what must be accomplished, as well as a date by which the task must be completed. The job doesn't disappear from the staff member's and the manager's task list until the job is finished. In the process of job completion, Outlook prompts the staff member to provide regular updates. The task won't fall through the cracks, and no error of omission will occur. We use this same system to automatically ensure recurring working procedures are completed on time and without fail, and the feature is also perfect for keeping track of personal tasks. There are other mechanical methodologies, such as day planners and wall-mounted task list bulletin boards, but computer-based ones are superior because they are fast, easily shared, and in your face. Research the numerous computer-based organizers that are available, or, if you have the resources, create your own. A procedure to create procedures. As we began creating working procedures at CentraTel, I felt compelled to do much of the documentation myself. It took me months to see that this was unnecessary, and I caution you not to fall into the same trap. There is a system for everything, so certainly there is one that will oversee the creation of procedures by people other than you, a procedure for procedures. This master document lays out the format and the tone you want staff to use in creating everyday working procedures. Once complete, you will train your managers to use it exactly. CentraTel's procedure for procedures is listed in Appendix D. The core of the training is the procedure for procedures itself. And when I say train, I mean train. Each manager must get it. Set aside group classes that will be uninterrupted. You will be the teacher, and your managers will be the students. Consider having your staff study this book. Note, a quiz for testing comprehension of the fundamental Work the System principles is available at workthesystem.com/quiz. An added benefit of having your staff create working procedures is that the process will encourage them to buy into the methodology. They will see the beauty of it firsthand, from the bottom up. Be relentless, however, in examining the procedures they create. You want to know what's happening. It is the leader's job to make sure employees have exact guidelines for each task they do. Then, it is the employee's job to follow the instructions precisely. On this point, I am adamant. It is the staff member's first responsibility to implement a procedure exactly as written. There is no latitude here. There must be strict adherence. Do my staff members comply? Yes, for four reasons. First, simple logic. Because the written procedure methodology works, they buy into it 100%. Second, as mentioned, they are involved with the creation and the approval of nearly all procedures, so they are fully vested in them. In fact, CentraTel's staff write 98% of all procedures and have a heavy hand in the other 2% that I personally create. Third, if an employee has a good idea for improving a procedure, we will make an instant modification with no bureaucratic hang-ups. No one wades through the system improvement working procedure process grumbling about how intractable it is. Fourth, if a procedure is followed and something goes wrong, the staff member is not at fault. It is the procedure that is in error. Ruthlessness and flexibility. Point number 3 in the previous paragraph merits repeating. Yes, be ruthless in insisting that your staff follow procedures exactly, but balance this strict rule with the understanding that if a procedure must be changed in order to remain effective, with proper consensus, it will be changed instantly. The procedure itself is rock solid and inflexible until the moment your management staff agree that changes are necessary. At CentraTel, we make the decision to modify a procedure right now, in an ad hoc meeting, anytime, any place. We modify the procedure in that moment, and in the next moment, the adjusted procedure will be distributed to all parties affected. Unwieldy bureaucracy is the enemy, and each time one of us witnesses slow-moving decision-making in other businesses, it confirms for us that our own operation is flexible, efficient, and potent. The perfect example of bureaucratic paralysis is, of course, government, the quintessential nonprofit organization that is in business to spend other people's money. Government has given written procedures a bad name. If there is a ubiquitous generalization about the nightmare of paperwork and bureaucracy, one can say thank you to the overabundance of governmental organizations that surround and engulf us. Your competitors don't do this. I used to be involved with answering service trade groups. I've served as president of 2 national associations and was a board member for a couple of others. I became knowledgeable about the politics of my industry and enjoyed communicating with my peers. At the tail end of my involvement with these groups, I gave a presentation to 60 answering service owners in Las Vegas. The topic was procedures and their importance. At the beginning of the one-hour session, I asked the group, "How many of you have written procedures for your operation?" No one raised a hand. I am still shocked to think of that day, but nonetheless, operating without written guidelines is the way it is for most small businesses. A majority of small business owners are looking for answers in the wrong places because they have not gone through the dissection process that thorough documentation demands. They don't have goals, and they don't see the internal inefficiency of their systems. So they seek spur-of-the-moment global solutions, some quick fix, a magic pill, that in one fell swoop will make everything better. Often the magic pill they seek is a godlike new employee, a mind reader and fortune teller, an extraordinary individual who will flawlessly manage the business and, with little guidance, take it to its deserved success. Of course, in the real world, these people don't exist. Here is the curious fact that most small business owners and managers don't get. Terrific employees are out there. But in a non-documented business, none will function anywhere near their potential because mind reading and fortune telling are not things humans can do, no matter how advanced their IQ or educational pedigree. See Appendix A for an article I wrote regarding documentation and employees. At the risk of appearing impudent, I ask, is it any wonder that Centratel operates and advertises itself as the highest quality telephone answering service in the United States? My staff know exactly what to do and exactly how to do it. Errors seldom occur because these actions are the most efficient possible, based on the staff relentlessly tweaking systems to perfection. And when there is an error, that error spurs us to devise an even better mechanical system for the future. We don't spend our time coping with bad results that are the products of neglected systems. We work our systems so that bad results don't happen. It's elementary. If each component of an organization is nearly flawless, the organization as a whole will be nearly flawless, as evidenced by profitability, net worth, customer-reported error rate, client longevity, staff longevity, reputation, etc. Centratel's five managers are tenacious in applying the work-the-system strategy. They assertively search for system inefficiencies, revel in devising system improvements, and enthusiastically create working procedures to make those systems permanently effective. Their individual reward includes reasonable length work weeks, personal freedom with lots of room for creativity, and intense pride in what they do and where they work. Also, they are highly paid. Systems, systems, systems. It all adds up to satisfaction for the staff, superb quality for customers, and solid profits for my partner and me. Further tangible evidence of our efficiency. In our TSR quality statistics for the 12 months prior to the publication of this book, we averaged one client-reported error for every 9,990 messages processed. In that time period, one TSR, Kathleen, had but a single error in the more than 60,000 messages she personally processed. Our service rates, they are higher than the competitors, but not by much, because our systems methodology has, while creating unmatched quality, eliminated waste and generated tremendous cost savings efficiency. Our customers, successful in their own businesses, they are happy with the arrangement with Centratel, as illustrated by our average client tenure, which exceeds 7 years. Remember, the average new business has an 80% chance of failing in the first 5 years. How about your small business, or you and your position in the company where you work? Attain the systems perspective epiphany, and then buckle down to start the documentation. The day you begin, you will be in select company, way out in front of 98% of your small business competitors, or, if you work for someone else, your coworkers. Note that written working procedures are not necessary for your personal life. Why? First, and forgive my firm grasp of the obvious, it's just silly to write down how you will maintain the car, work on the details of your marriage, stay in shape, pay bills, or develop a system for staying in touch with friends. With your new vision ingrained, you'll handle these processes systematically without having to write up documentation. Second, a primary reason for creating working procedures is to make sure that the people you supervise are handling details just as you would handle them. Since you are the only one operating your personal life, it is good enough to hardwire your personal working procedures in your head without documentation. The exceptions? Lists for travel or shopping, travel itineraries, to-do lists, and intricate technical instructions. A summary of procedure documentation. 1. At work, every recurring process requires a working procedure. The procedure will precisely define the best method of performing the action, handling the situation, or answering the question. 2. A problem is a good thing when your staff takes it as a cue for the creation or modification of a working procedure. However, be reasonable. Do not create an unwieldy bureaucracy by writing up procedures for problems that are random or seldom. In other words, problems that have little chance of resurfacing. There is a danger of being inundated with a massive conglomeration of rarely used procedures, thus creating complexity due to the sheer volume of information. Solving infrequent problems requires just a bit of common sense based on the guidelines provided by the Strategic Objective and General Operating Principles documents. 3. Be sure your staff are involved in creating the new procedures. In fact, relentlessly delegate. 4. By making procedures identical in presentation, their individual instructions will come through loud and clear without becoming confused by various style or tone variations. This is where you as the leader come in. It's up to you to keep things on track. 5. Without exception, test every new procedure. Before releasing, give it to a staff member who will carefully go through the steps to spot glitches. Take this stance. In a new or revamped procedure, glitches will always occur. 6. As the leader, sign off on procedures yourself. Make sure they are consistent with your overall vision. Keep things in order and always in line with your strategic objective and operating principles. That's your job. Note, the documentation process can be made simple and fast with Work the System Easy Template software. Go to workthesystem.com/easy for information. Also, the entire Work the System process is presented in a 2-day boot camp in Bend, Oregon. Go to workthesystem.com/bootcamp for details. Illustration: Frank Zappa's System Improvement Strategy. If you think your business or work situation is different, and therefore some of these principles won't necessarily apply, consider this. Frank Zappa was one of the most brilliant avant-garde rock artists of the 70s and 80s. He scored each note of every song and required 100% performance accuracy from his band members. After a concert, when most of his contemporaries would likely be attending a post-performance party, Frank would be conducting a mandatory attendance post-mortem with his backup band. During these performance autopsies, individual players were assessed a $50 fine for each and every note missed. New band members were quick to challenge Zappa's recollection of the score in their individual performances. More experienced members knew better. Frank's perfect recall of the performance was easy enough to verify. The evening's audio recordings would confirm what Frank already knew, and the fines would stand. Band members who were fined were not likely to forget to rehearse their parts before the next performance. Frank set the bar high, and his success is rock music history. Does this attention to detail seem persnickety? Your challenge is to embrace this level of attention rather than to be repelled by it. The end result? Less work, more time, more money. By the way, Frank Zappa never used drugs and was quite the family man. Are there processes at your workplace that yield different results every time, depending on who performs the process? If statistics are gathered for any given process, are there exact written instructions for how to gather and analyze them? As the leader of your organization, to what level of strictness do you hold your staff members accountable? Do they know what to expect?